You're listening to Raphael Epstein.
Oh, yes, it's time to talk film, one of my favourite times of the week, because Josh Nelson is here in the studio in the nude. He's our film critic. His blog is filmology.com. Josh, you're naked. You're a fine figure of a man. Daniel Craig, move on over, I say.
The check's in the mail.
Yeah, pleasure. Look, the reason I'm talking about nudity, there's a new film out called Spring Breakers. We'll get to Josh's review of it in a moment. Long story short, Britney Spears meets Scarface is one description of it. There's a whole lot of young, nubile American actresses who rose to prominence off the back, actually, of the Mickey Mouse Club. And they are prominently displayed wearing not very much in this film. So it's prompted us to ask for the best nude scene in a film. The not gratuitous, the best perhaps if we can describe it as relevant to plot and character. The non-gratuitous, the non-extraneous. So 1300-222-774, the best nude scene in a film. There's a few of your texts here already. Let me read them to you. Best nude scene, hands down, Life of Brian. That's from Diane Mount Eliza. I assume that's just before he gets called, he's not a messiah, he's a naughty boy. I quite like that. Hey, Raph, the two nude scenes of relevance to plot. I like this text. It's from Byron in Werribee. Bond, Daniel Craig, tortured in the wicker chair, which I think is from the first Daniel Craig Bond film. And the second, I can't remember the title, Russian Mafia fight scene in a sauna with Viggo Mortensen, which I believe is Eastern Promises. Now, before I get on to the review of Spring Breaker, I want to point out, this is not what I expected at all, but Anne in Mornington, Raph, I know you're a Game of Thrones fan. Talk about gratuitous sex, not to mention the violence, but great storyline. Yes, I think we're talking about things that are the very opposite of Game of Thrones. You know what they say HBO stands for in the United States. Yes, you do. You know what the B stands for in HBO. So this is not quite a child-rated version of the show, but we'll try to keep it clean. So 1300-222-774, your best nude scene in a film in just one moment. But let's talk about the film to hand. James Franco and a whole lot of women wearing not very much in Spring Breakers. Josh, what's it about and what's it like?
Well, to give the plot of this film, I think might give a misinterpretation of what this film's actually about. In a kind of nutshell, it's four sort of disenfranchised young college girls who decide that during their spring break, they want to head off to Florida. They don't have the cash, so three of them go and rob a diner, and they steal a car and take off down the coast.
I meant to say it's Scarface. It's Britney Spears meets Scarface and Point Break as well. I've heard that description.
And all three of those films are referenced in the context of this film. A plot like that, a plot description like that makes it sound like some sort of wacky, TNA teen movie, the kind of, the Porky's genre that were popular in the mid-80s. This is very unlike that. It opens with the typical sort of beach party Florida scene that we've seen in hundreds of those types of films of, nubiles writhing on a beach, lots of shots of,
like a music video.
Yeah, use your imagination, a hip-hop video. But then there's something quite disconcerting about what this film, I think, is actually trying to do. And I think it's one of those films that I came out of just a couple of days ago, and I didn't know where to start. Even trying to kind of piece together what I'd just seen, or in terms of the social commentary or the politics of the director. And the director's quite important, I think, to understanding this film. It's Tahmani Karim, who has done films like Gummo and Trash Humpers. So he's a fairly he's a provocateur, basically. But what you get in this film,
kind of out there provocateur, though. He's out on the edge.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of guessed what this film was going to be like when in the opening credits there were 14 production companies listed in terms of funding. So, he's had to kind of shop this around in order to just kind of get it to the screen. I'm guessing that the actresses, the Vanessa Hudgens, Selena Gomez and the Franco have probably worked for very little. And I think maybe the appeal of it is a change of pace or to break out of their, like you said, the Disney Mickey Mouse Club personas that they've got going on.
We're serious artists, in inverted commas, maybe.
Well, yeah, particularly Franco, who describes himself as a Renaissance man.
Does James Franco do a bit of a wigger turn? That's what I've heard. I don't know if that's true.
Well, so basically something goes wrong when they get to Florida in this sort of Dionysian, lifestyle of hate, drug and sex and violence. And he ends up bailing them out. And he's this sort of white gangster or wannabe gangster, and they sort of get taken under his wing in quite a sort of almost a disturbing way. I mean, the funny thing about this film is there's no real explicit sex, there's no real explicit violence in terms of the kind of grotesqueries that we expect from even just sort of mainstream action films, but there's something very disconcerting about the way in which the film is put together stylistically and in quite clever ways. So we get scenes of all the debauchery going on the beaches with a voiceover of the girls, particularly the young innocent one, phoning home to mum saying it's like a paradise, it's the most amazing thing. All these kind of cliches that we see on reality TV, I feel so changed, I'm like a new person, I can't wait to get back to my life, all these kind of things. But it's the contrast, that kind of the anachronistic sort of voice to what we're seeing.
So does the salaciousness overwhelm the irony and the intent?
Well, this is a difficult thing with this film, particularly in terms of adopting that strategy of excess. I mean, it takes what would be just a sort of the titillating scenes that might be on the window dressing of most films,
yeah,
and exaggerates to a point where, you know, the audience, I think, if you're a kind of, you know, a thoughtful viewer, becomes conscious of their own voyeurism. And that's what I think the best way to describe the effect of this film is to liken it to the Chris Cunningham music video clip for that Aphex Twin song Window Licker, where he superimposes a man's face,
that's really disturbing,
on the female kind of bikini bodies.
Right, a man with a beard.
And it's that something that's quite disconcerting, which previously would have been something quite salacious, like you said. So look, this is a clever film. It riffs on gender, it riffs on race, it definitely is a sort of quite a pointed critique on Gen Y and the sense of entitlement. But this is a film that I think I need a longer critical reflection.
Okay, let's hear a little bit from the Spring Breakers trailer.
All I know is I'm not going to sit here another day.
Spring Break.
How are we going to get enough money?
I don't know.
We're the only one still here.
Spring Break. I'm
tired of seeing the same thing.
Spring Break.
It's your chance to see something different.
Spring Break.
Just get the cash.
Pretend like it's a video game.
We can do this.
Spring Break.
There you go. That's Spring Breakers. Now, let me read to you a few of your texts on good nude scenes. I like this one. Raf, The Crying Game, best use of plot-driving nudity ever. That's from Gina. Yep, I think that pretty much, you're on a winning path there. Phil says, Sirens, that is all. Someone else, Harvey Keitel in Bad Lieutenant, which personally for me I found traumatic, but, you know, that's just me.
Harvey Keitel in everything, really.
Yeah, pretty much. Someone saying The Terminator, the sex mattered. Okay, there you go.
In The Terminator?
Yeah, I don't get that. But look, a few people nominating this as well. What about the semi-nude scene in the piano? Pretty romantic. That's in that's from Sue in Blairgowrie. And I think, yes, the piano for me wins for sort of best use of erotic nudity. But that's just my old-fashioned sense of self. And there's another text here. Raph, I think Richard Gere in his prime did some very fine nude work, and there's a stunning nude scene in Little Children with Kate Winslet and Patrick Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
Directed like that? I don't.
On the top of a washing machine.
Oh, okay. Look, really?
Do you want me to describe? No, I won't.
What was the Nicole Kidman, John Cusack washing machine sex scene? What was in the Paperboy? That was so
In the prison cell, yeah.
In the prison cell. That was just way too disturbing for words. The best nude scene in a film. It might be gratuitous. I don't know. It's up to you to judge. 1300 222 774. Let me just read a few of your Facebook comments. The waiting and waiting and waiting for Mark Wahlberg in Boogie Nights for the big expose. I like that. The best full frontal you never saw. And for partial nudity, when Ryan Gosling took his shirt off in that silly film Crazy Stupid Love. Probably even better given the hysterical line by Emma Stone asking if that's for real or was he photoshopped. Yes, I did love that. Even though I didn't see the film, it was only in the trailer, but I still liked it. It was very funny. And Krisha writes, Room with a View. I don't remember Room with a View. I saw it, but I don't remember it. Rupert Graves, Julian Sands and Simon Callow as Freddie, George and Mr. Beebe chasing each other around a small pond. There you go. Have you got one?
Well, look, you know, Kate Winslet's been mentioned a couple of times, and given she's an actress who seems to get her kit off quite regularly, it's quite hard to pick my favourite Kate Winslet nude scene, although I have to say the re-release of Titanic in 3D was quite spectacular.
I don't, you know, maybe it's just me, maybe I've got a mental block over these issues. I don't remember many nude scenes. I was actually trying to think of them, and the one that came to mind was Life of Brian. I don't know why, maybe because I saw it when I was really young. 1300 222 774. I'd love to hear your voices as well, but there's so many on the text, I don't want to miss them. Hey, Raph, the bearded guy, in the Aphex Twin video, it's Chris Cunningham, a.k.a. Richard James. There you go. Le Grand Bouffe. Someone's actually nominated Le Grand Bouffe. I would nominate that up there with my incredibly disturbing Bad Lieutenant category, but again, that's just me. Eric in True Blood. Is Eric the Aussie?
No, Eric is the tall Scandinavian.
Oh, that's Skarsgård.
Yeah, exactly.
Mr. Skarsgård, who's the cool marine and the son of Skellen Skarsgård as well. Oh, they're talking about... You see, I don't remember... I see. Someone was referencing the Terminator scene before. They're saying, of course, that the sex scene with Sarah Connor is where John is made. So therefore, the gratuitous nudity is incredibly relevant because it provides for the sequel.
But we do see Arnie nude at the start of that film.
Yeah, look, a few people actually texted in at 3 o'clock mentioning the Arnold nude scene at the very beginning. I actually watched Terminator 2 last week. Geez, it's still a good film.
It's a great film.
It really is. It's just embarrassing to say, but it's still a good film. Look, I do want to get to the calls, but you're rattling through my childhood here, so I want to pay tribute to that. Betty Blue from Hayden in Brighton. Remember when the Valhalla advertised the Betty Blue? They used to say, don't be late for Betty Blue, because you didn't want to miss the start. Deb's call from Geelong. Hi, Deb.
Oh, hi there, Raph. How you going?
Good. Best nude scene?
Good. Oh, it has to be Team America, doesn't it?
Oh, gold. Yes, the sex scene in Team America. Oh, well done. Oh, very
Thank
much.
You. So. I figured there's got to be a few votes out there for that one.
Definitely. Oh, yeah. Look, if we had a Bataki ham, it'd be going your way. Leonie's called from Moorabbin. Hi, Leonie.
Hi, Raph.
What's your scene?
This is a really unique one. It's quite an old movie, and I don't remember the name of it, but it was Donald Sutherland, and he's only in his 20s. And he's with Jacqueline Bisset, who is just as young and just as gorgeous.
It's not Clute, is it? Because that's Jane Fonda.
No, and it's an eerie kind of movie, and they're mourning the death of their toddler who drowned in the river.
Oh.
And they're kind of both really upset, but they have this beautiful sex scene where they're sort of upset, but they're, you know, making love.
So it's like
love.
A consoling love scene.
Oh, it's beautiful. And she's, wow. I mean, she's almost completely flat-chested, but she's so sexy and beautiful. It's just lovely.
It's not what you've got to tell you, usually. I need to thank you for that. And sorry, John.
Yeah, I think the film's called Don't Look Now. And I've got a feeling it's Donald Sutherland and Julie Christie. From Nicholas Rogue, who also directed Walkabout, directed that.
Ah, okay. There you go. What's that, 70s?
Yes, early 70s, I think.
Right, okay. We're not resorting to Google. No, we're relying on our memories. But I do want to briefly mention another film, which is called Taboo, Josh.
Yes.
Tell me a bit about Taboo.
Spelt T-A-B-U, or maybe a play on words with the English connotations of taboo. I'm not sure what the Portuguese word is. It's a Portuguese film from director Miguel Gomez. This is another kind of thinking person's film. It's a curiosity in many ways.
We don't do thinking people's films now.
I know. Well, I'll be called pseudo.
Can I interrupt? Because someone's just mentioned Lisa Bonet in Angel Heart.
I just
was suddenly very 16 in my mind. But keep going,
and
please.
Now
Taboo.
Now I'm picturing Mickey Rourke nude in Angel Heart. Great. Yeah. Taboo. I guess one of the distinguishing features.
Picture Mickey
this.
Rourke in 9.5 weeks, maybe. Does that help or not? I don't know.
Anyway, Taboo. There's a Portuguese film we should talk about. It's a film in two parts. The first part is set in present-day Lisbon. It involves a middle-aged woman who's working for the UN and, I guess, her relationship to an elderly neighbour who's sort of being nursed by a woman from Cape Verde. And it's this curious kind of interpersonal drama. We get sort of glimpses of their day-to-day life, but nothing sort of concrete in terms of the typical three-act sort of rise-and-fall narrative. And then at a certain point or a certain event that happens midway, the film flips in a sense, and the entire second half of the film is a flashback story from one of the characters in the first half, told almost exclusively through a voiceover and in the style of a sort of silent film. So the performance styles are sort of acted out on screen, and it revolves around a couple or sort of a forbidden romance.
Right.
In Africa, on the foothills of Mount Taboo, which sort of takes place and the sort of the African countryside, and it's very
so
much
it shifts from modern day Lisbon to this. What is it, reenactment in a way? If you can't hear what they're saying, how would you describe that second half?
Well, it is played in a different style. I mean, even the first half has a quirkiness to it,
right.
A distinctiveness in terms of the way in which it's filmed. The whole thing is in black and white, both halves. It's shot in a 4:3 ratio, so it's sort of a smaller
old-fashioned TV.
Yep. This is it's a curiosity, and I think in some ways it's a bold and innovative. This has got critical applause across the board. I really enjoyed the first half. There was something quite intriguing about the characters, and particularly with the elderly lady. There's a moment where she recalls this dream that she's just had about an ape that reminds her of her husband. And the camera, the scene is taking place in a casino in a sort of a revolving restaurant. So the camera sort of stays fixed on her, but the background is constantly rotating.
Yeah, right.
It's
How
a really
weird.
Sort of mesmerizing film. And the quality of the dialogue reminded me a little bit of, you know, the sort of quirkiness that defined shows like Northern Exposure and Twin Peaks, just that sort of almost staccato rhythms. Mm-hmm. But there was something about the second half in terms of the style of the film that I struggled with, even though I really appreciated it on an artistic level. I think just the length of it trying to kind of stay engaged with the voiceover and what was going on the screen became a bit of a stretch. But this is a film I think is steeped in sort of post-colonialism. I mean, the references to Africa, the sort of the white guilt and the shadows of white guilt that play on both sides of the narrative are quite clever. This is a fascinating. I think I appreciate it more on an artistic perspective than an emotional or intellectual level. But yeah, this is done. In fact, interestingly, I think Australia's been its best received country in terms of box office, which is remarkable in itself.
So Taboo is on where?
That's a pretty small release, so you'll find that at places like Cinema Nova, a couple of Palace Cinemas.
Okay, Taboo, spelt T-A-B-U. Josh Nelson, thank you to you as well.
Pleasure.
Josh's film blog is filmology.com, spelt with a P-H.